Welcome to Straight Thinking, a GPS for the Christian mind, teaching you how to think, not what to think. This is Average Joe Aguirre with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples and physicist Dave Rogstad. On today's podcast, would science work in any world? Does it require certain conditions? If so, what are they? Ken will discuss those questions today. All right, Ken, sounds like you've been thinking about this topic, and it's a good one.
Yeah, I've met many scientists, obviously working at Reasons to Believe, and almost to a person, I will at some point ask them, well, why does science work? And often they will respond to it just works. Yeah. You know, that's just the way it is. And I was thinking the other day that science does work in our world, and we know that it works because there are certain conditions that are present that allows this scientific enterprise to be successful. And amazingly, over the last couple hundred years, science has made a lot of progress. But I want to ask the question, would it work in any world? And if not, and my intuition, in fact, my argument is it's not going to work in many worlds. It's going to work with certain conditions being present. But if that's the case, would it work in a world where you can't trust these kinds of things to be consistent? And would it work in an atheist world? So that's kind of where we're going with
intriguing.
This.
Intriguing. Okay.
Kind of issue. By world here, you kind of
universe,
mean
universe, cosmos.
Yeah, cosmos. A sort of philosophical concept of world, not an
that's
earth
right.
or this earth or that planet or
yeah. You know, just as you would postulate another universe,
right?
But that universe has
different laws and different
ideas. Well, I want to begin with a quotation that I'm very fond of. It's physicist and science writer Paul Davies. I quote this in my book, A World of Difference. Davies says, in the ensuing 300 years, the theological dimension of science has faded. People take it for granted that the physical world is both ordered and intelligible. The underlying order in nature, the laws of physics, are simply accepted as given, as brute facts. Nobody asks where they came from, at least they do not do so in polite company. However, even the most atheistic scientist accepts as an act of faith that the universe is not absurd, that there is a rational basis to physical existence manifested as law-like order in nature, that it is at least partly comprehensible to us. Then he concludes with this very provocative, pregnant statement. He says, so science can proceed only if the scientist adopts an essentially theological worldview. Now, I find that to be very, very powerful, and I want to explore a little bit in our time together, what are the conditions that make science possible? Science isn't magic, after all. Science isn't shamanism. Science follows a very rational, orderly process. There are dependencies, there are assumptions. I mean, that's one of the great appeals about science, that it is able, it's efficient, it works. We can count on it, you know, carrying forth certain things. But then, of course, the question is, would it work in any worldview at all? And I want to come back to that, but I want to talk a little bit about some of the ideas that are built into this. And in fact, I want to begin with some assumptions here. I think it's interesting that a lot of times to scientists, the assumptions that make science possible are not necessarily recognized immediately. I've told this story a number of times, but I tell it because it was so striking to me. I was doing a radio debate with a science professor up in Fresno, and he was a professor there at the university, which has a very good academic reputation, by the way.
Central California, for those.
That's right. A little bit north, but central northern California. Anyway, the title for the professor was a professor of evolution, which I had never actually known anybody that had that particular title. But he began by saying, as a scientist, I have no beliefs. And boy, that just struck me. And when it was time for me to talk, I said, you know, I want to push back against that idea that you don't have any beliefs. I think science is based on a lot of critical beliefs. For example, I said, don't you have confidence that logic and mathematics are reliable? And that over the last couple hundred years, I mean, it may not have always been this way in Western science, but over the last couple hundred years, Dave, it seems that this congruence, I guess would be the right word, this congruence between mathematical ideas and the natural world plays a very important part in science. And so I said to the professor that I was debating, I said, don't you have a lot of confidence in mathematics, that math seems to be built into the nature of reality? And I said, you have confidence that you can draw logical inferences. Now, again, I don't think science can validate mathematics and the laws of logic. That is, they don't appear to be things you could observe through a telescope or a microscope. They do work, but there's still this idea that in order to do science, math has to be reliable. Logic has to be reliable.
They're the tools, in a sense. And you're using these tools and finding out that they work. And so the reliability of them is sort of gained by having the experience of seeing them be effective.
Yeah,
It's kind of like you get a hammer, and a hammer is useful in certain circumstances. But
the reality of math and logic is not dependent upon science. It appears that they exist.
It's a given.
Yeah, they exist as part of the kind of explanatory whole. Well, I raised other issues with the professor.
What is his response to this?
Well, that's where I'm going. Okay, that's where I'm right. going. I said you believe there's a real world out there. You don't believe that we create that world, or you don't believe that it's just your private personal experience of the world. You believe there is that world out there. And I realize there are elements of quantum mechanics where the observer might influence the experimental reality. But I also said, you also believe that world is, at least in part, as Paul Davy says, intelligible to us, that you can track the order of that world, that this is an orderly place. And so in my book, I raise some of these kinds of issues. By the way, he didn't respond to anything that I said. I think because he recognized that, there's something else going on behind the practice of science. There are assumptions that you begin with, and those assumptions are critical. Those beliefs are critical to the practice of science. Well, some of the things that I kind of lay out here, number one, that the physical universe is a distinct objective reality. Unlike Eastern mysticism, where, that world may be there or not, in Hinduism, the world may be illusory, or the world may be God, and you don't want to go, sticking test tubes into God, but that there is this world out there, matter, energy, time, and space. The laws exhibit order, patterns, and regularity. Dave, it seems to me to do science, I have to have confidence that the experiments I'm going to do this morning
repetitive.
Are going to correspond to what I'm going to do in the afternoon and will correspond to what I'm going to do next week.
That's fundamental, because if I perform an experiment and I write it up, with the results of my experiment, the reliability of that is tested by someone else who tries to do the same experience. And if it doesn't work.
Now, what would happen if I lived in a world that is, again, what if we were able to take another cosmos? Let's suppose that there's the many worlds hypothesis. I think it's interesting that scientists have gotten into the philosophy business here. But let's suppose we could take another cosmos. I mean, what if that world, Dave, didn't exhibit order, patterns, and regularity? What would that do to science?
Couldn't do it.
How about the laws of nature being uniform throughout the physical universe? I mean, for example, what if the experiments I did on Earth didn't work on the moon? Or what if they didn't work in some other galaxy? What if that universe was kind of chaotic? How difficult would that be for the scientist?
Now, as you alluded to earlier, of course, the quantum world does have a lot of these strange behaviors. So that if we lived at a level where those kinds of conditions existed at our level, where we live, then the world would be very strange. But there still are equations that you can write down. There are still phenomena that you can predict.
And isn't the basic problem at the quantum level? It's not that you enter into the magical world.
No, it's not magic.
This is such a small area that you have counterintuitive experiences.
Yes.
It's hard to measure. It's hard to weigh. It's hard to evaluate.
But you're still able to do it. I mean, we have a quantum, a standard model of quantum mechanics that does a very good job of predicting and telling us what the behavior is at that level.
Now, let me raise another point here. What if the physical universe was not intelligible? I mean, let me offer this point of view. I often ask myself the question, is it possible that I have been biased? That is, I notice as I get older, I kind of want to listen to people who agree with me in politics. When I listen to people who have very different views of politics, it's a little difficult for me. Or if I meet people that, don't think the Lakers are the best team in the world, it's like, ugh. Well, what I begin to realize is I like to be around people who agree with me. I do find it hard sometimes when people hold very different views. But in order to kind of test myself, in order to make sure I'm being intellectually responsible, I want to find a voice on the other side. But not just any voice. It can't be a crazy voice. It can't be a voice that's not well reasoned and careful in thinking. But a good example of this is for the last 30 years I've believed that Lee Harvey Oswald assassinated President Kennedy. There's no conspiracy. Oswald did it. He did it alone. Didn't have any help. And yet, a lot of people disagree with me. And so I think, am I missing something? So I went out and I tried to find the most reasonable conspiracy-oriented person, a person who actually believed that maybe somebody helped Oswald. And I had to kind of filter through a lot of that. But what I'm saying here is, I also do that when it comes to naturalism, when it comes to other worldviews. I can always talk to Dave and Hugh and Fuzz and Jeff and AJ and get their perspective on science and faith. But I also like to listen to people who maybe don't share that faith. Paul Davies is one of them. And one of the reasons I like to listen to him is not only is he a preeminent scientist, but I think he's very reasonable. He doesn't appear to be angry. He doesn't appear to dismiss religion. He had a he had a dialogue debate with Hugh Ross, and they had a very congenial back and forth discussion. Well, you know, Paul Davies would say, and I want to be accurate in the way I state this, but I think maybe Paul Davies would say something like this, that he finds the fact that the universe is at least partially intelligible to us as an amazing thing. I wonder if he would be willing to say that that's kind of a staggering thing if there's no God. That not only is where the world came from, I don't know. I don't know what an atheist would say. Maybe I have begun to see the idea of some atheists are now suggesting that Big Bang cosmology, that is the Big Bang singularity, is not a fact. And that, so maybe the universe really never had a beginning. I'm starting to see atheists argue that. One atheist said, you know, that's 40 years ago. The Big Bang's old.
That's yesterday.
That's yesterday, you know. 40 years. Well, I remember 40 years ago.
But to an astronomer, that's like a second ago.
That's not very long. Well, but Paul Davies, I think, is getting at the idea that, you know, if we evolved by purely natural processes, there's no mind behind the universe. So by accident, by coincidence, this species of creatures evolves who actually has the capacity to track the intelligibility of the universe. Now, again, from a God point of view, that's not going to be staggering. I mean, God has a mind, an infinite, eternal mind. He creates creatures who have a mind, a finite mind, and he creates the world with order, like regularity and math and logic are consistent. And so we can track the intelligibility of that. But what if there is no God? I think, again, I would say to the Fresno professor, isn't science a miracle that you have an evolved mind, a mind that is the product of blind mechanistic naturalistic processes, and yet you can discover truth about the universe? I mean, this is kind of getting at that question of the argument from reason. Where does that come from? Here's another British. I like the Brits. I like their rock and roll that they brought to America. I also like some of the British scientists who are Christian theists. John Polkinghorne happens to be one. He says here, we are so familiar with the fact that we can understand the world that most of the time we take it for granted. It is what makes science possible, yet it could have been otherwise. The universe might have been a disorderly chaos rather than an orderly cosmos. Mm-hmm. So, Dave, am I...
Well, I guess I would tend to think of it the other way around, that the universe, wherever we happen to exist, would obey some laws of physics. There would be some laws. I mean, if we were in a different universe, say in the multiverse, and it was different laws, it would still be laws. But the connection or the disconnection is, why should our mind that came about through these natural processes be able to have any comprehension of these laws? Why should we have the ability to comprehend that particular set of laws that govern that universe?
It seems like there are two things going on. One, why is there the regularity?
Why are there laws of physics?
Why are there laws of physics?
Yes.
But then why do evolved creatures have the mind that gives them the capacity to track that order?
That's right.
That intelligibility.
When you look at animals, for instance, the most intelligent animals don't have the ability to do mathematics like we do.
Yeah.
To be able to comprehend the order and the laws that are in the universe.
Ken,
so suddenly we an animal, now have this ability.
would this be an affirmation of Romans chapter 1 in that what can be known about God is evident in us? The reason why we have this ability to track these is because the Creator wants His revelation known.
Right.
Could you argue that way and thus affirm the Christian worldview?
I think so. In fact, I find this type of reasoning very powerful, that from a Judeo-Christian worldview, a biblical worldview, and I think there are times where Christians want to insist that their worldview is the worldview, but the reality is that Jews and Christians, people of the book, share this worldview. So this Judeo-Christian worldview says that you have this infinite, eternal, spiritual God, and He calls everything into existence, to use the parlance of science, matter, energy, time, and space. And He creates this universe with nomos, with laws, with logos, with logic. And these things come out of the mind of God. And then He networks that world he created. He creates us in His image. And then He networks us all together. And so the Judeo-Christian worldview would say, science is an expected phenomenon. We can understand things about the natural world because of the way God set it up. He's responsible for the laws and the logic. He's responsible for creating minds that can track the intelligibility of the universe. And to add to it, I mean, John Calvin talked about the sensus divinitatis, the sense of the divine, that we appear to have this direct awareness of God and of His providence, that there are things about Him we can know. And I think in one sense, Romans 1 says, because He made us that way, you know, that it's hard for us to kind of move out of that kind of context. But of course, what I want to get to in a couple minutes is, what if I can't assume any of that? What if I can't assume a mind behind the universe? What if I can't assume that I was designed in such a way as to discover math, logic, universals? That is, you know, smart people always appeal to this, to these areas of study. They appeal to logic. They appeal to mathematics. But what if I weren't a creature that was created in that particular way? Now, let me touch on just a couple other things. Another part of the universe is that the world is good. The world's valuable. The world is worthy. That's not true in Hinduism. That's not necessarily true in Eastern mysticism. The world is illusory. The world also may be divine, and you don't go operating on God. You know, scientists might be in real trouble if they try to study God if the universe is God's body, so to speak. But in a Judeo-Christian context, the world's there. We're not Gnostics. Ah, the heresies now. A heresy is a teaching, a belief system that is so antithetical to historic Christianity that if it were adopted, it would change the very nature of Christianity. Now, I think that's exactly right with Gnosticism. Gnostics thought that the spiritual is good and matter is evil. They also thought that you could have this esoteric knowledge, not knowledge from logical inference, not knowledge from drawing data from experiments, not induction, deduction, abduction, but kind of a mystical knowledge. Now, if matter is a bad thing, then what happens to the incarnation of Jesus? If matter is illusory, if matter is a bad thing, then you can't have the incarnation. Jesus was a man. He had a physical body. What would Gnosticism do to the resurrection? There's no body needed to be resurrected. What would Gnosticism do to creation? Well, this is a world you can't trust. It's an illusion. That's where I begin to see these kind of heresies that really kind of change Christianity. But from a biblical point of view, the world's it's a good place. It's a place you can study and you can have confidence. And this is the point I'm making here, essentially, is this is why and how I think biblical religions of Judaism and Christianity have helped science to develop. The early scientists, by and large, were Christians and Jews, and they thought it was a good idea to do science because it was going to bring glory to the Creator. Mm-hmm. How about some other ideas? The world is not divine and therefore not the object of worship. It can be the object of rational study. Again, in forms of Buddhism and Hinduism, the world is illusory. The world's God's body. I think that's going to be a showstopper.
Put constraints on what you can do.
Another point, human beings possess the ability to discover the universe's intelligibility. And Dave, we're back to this issue. Why is that the case? So there's no God behind the universe. Let's assume that. We'll deny the sensus divinitatis of Romans 1. Mm-hmm. There's no mind behind the universe. The universe is just here. How it got here, we don't know. Maybe it was always here in some form, or maybe in some quantum weird way it popped into existence from nothing. Boy, that's a stretch of logic, that to believe something came from real nothingness. Or maybe it was just here in some other form. But then somehow, through the process of evolution, human creatures evolved that are different than the animals. So, right, I have two dogs at home. I love those dogs. They're my friends. Every time I walk in the house, they're happy to see me.
In contrast to
some of my friends, like Dave Rockstad, who critiques my ideas. The dogs, they just come to me. You know, they just love me. But I realize that as much as I love these dogs, and as much as I, you know, when my wife and I talk about the dogs, or I talk about the dogs with my kids, I anthropomorphize the dogs. I'll often talk about them in human terms. You know, why does Gracie do that? Why does Lucy do something different? But I began to realize that I think humans are different not just in degree, we're different in kind. We have a rationality, we have a morality, we have a spirituality that make us, and I'm going to use the word exceptional. Mm-hmm. Well, that's understood in a theistic biblical context, but what's the chances of us evolving to have minds where we could recognize the intelligibility of the universe? We could do science. We're able to grasp this world. Max Tegmark says, you almost need three worlds. You know, you need the world of matter and you need the world of mathematics, and then you need the world of human consciousness. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. Three worlds. The world of matter, the world of math, and then the world of consciousness. But of course, I'm still going to ask the question there, what's the simplest explanation? If there is a God, then he can account for matter and math and consciousness.
Kind of what you're saying is that we can observe the exceptional characteristics of humanity. How do we explain that exceptional? Do we explain it by some naturalistic process, which we have a very difficult time explaining? Or is there the better explanation, which is
we were
created for that purpose?
And I think, I think this question, I think this abductive type of reasoning, what is the best explanation? I think that that's always lurking in the background. What is the best explanation of reality? It seems that if God exists and we're made in God's image and God has these attributes where he can create laws and logic to network that together, that makes a lot of sense for me.
Mm-hmm.
But let's deny the whole thing. No mind on the outside. Humans have evolved through purely natural processes. And we're stuck in this universe, which I'm not sure, you know, if we postulated another universe, let's say that was a universe where you couldn't count on the regularity of the laws of physics. Or let's say it was a weird world where purely mathematical principles would not necessarily correspond to physical reality. I mean, what if Einstein couldn't rely on math to figure out what's happening in the physics? When I took a physics class, it was a difficult class, but what struck me right from the get-go is, wow, these physicists rely on math. This is a significant prism, right?
Ken, is part of what you're bringing to our attention the idea that the naturalist will borrow from the Judeo-Christian worldview, but not give it acknowledgement. But in his denial of the Christian faith, for whatever reason, he just won't go there. Is that kind of what we're looking at?
I think so, Joe. You know, we have this idea of borrowed Christian capital. I think science and Christianity have a close connection in two fundamental ways. First of all, philosophically, I think Christianity and Judaism, the biblical perspective, biblical theism can account for the assumptions we bring to science, that I can trust math and logic, the world is orderly, regular, there's regularity, there's a concurrence, a connection between my ideas and the way the world is. So Christianity provides, I think, a basis for the assumptions of science. Now, that's a philosophical connection. But I think there's also another element in all of this, and that's the historical connection. The early scientists were both Christian and scientist. Science didn't begin in the Greco-Roman world. Even though the Greeks and the Romans had some pretty good understanding of engineering, had ideas of mathematics, the Chinese were no fools. They had an advanced civilization. India had an advanced civilization. Baghdad, 800 AD, developing principles of algebra. So we have this among these advanced civilizations who are not deeply dependent upon Christianity. I guess you could argue that Islam is in some ways quite dependent upon the Judeo-Christian ideas. The backdrop of Muhammad is a monotheistic faith, if you will. But, you know, if you look at the great civilization of, you know, the Fertile Crescent, the Mesopotamian world, the Chinese world, the Greco-Roman world, there are advances in technology and science-like ideas, but it seems they're stillborn. Science cannot kind of fully formed get out of the womb and make a splash and move forward. That happens one time. It's in about the middle of the 1600s, and it's in Christian Europe. So I would say that Christianity has a close relationship to science, Dave, both philosophically and historically. And remember, that historical relationship is a Hindu and a Buddhist may say, why would I want to do science? Maybe a person in China might say, you know, this isn't a linear process of cause and effect. This is a cyclical reincarnation. Everything is repeating. I mean, the cosmology in Buddhism is a beginningless and endless cosmology. It's cyclical. I think ideas really do matter. Now again, I don't, by arguing borrowed capital and by arguing the unique biblical perspective, it's not that I don't want to give credit to what a lot of people did, but something happened about 1650 in Europe. Science was birthed and it flourished. And I actually think one of the reasons why more people don't put science and Christianity together is because of how successful science has become. It's become so successful that its origins, its philosophical, historical origins, it's kind of left behind. Mm-hmm. So when I bump into scientists, a lot of times they don't know much about the philosophy of science or the history of science because they have so much specialization and study. Now though, I do want to raise this question again. Could we do science in any world? Science works in this world. It works in this world because it's a world where math and logic are valid. It's a world where we can trust our sensory organs, right? Went to the eye doctor, and I began to see how critically important our eyesight is. You know, I wanted to ask him a question about, since I have good eyesight, do you think that accounted for me being a good hitter? But you only have so many opportunities to ask doctor questions. So I had to pick and choose which one I'm going to ask. I'm going to go back to him and I'm going to ask him that if I had a 2015 eyesight, would it be able to hit the curveball? Well, I can trust my eyesight. I can also trust my cognitive faculties. My brain works. My brain appears to give me real understanding. So all of those things, logic works, math works, there's regularity, there's dependability, uniformity, my eyesight works, my cognitive faculties work. That all makes a lot of sense in a theistic world where we can assume that we have a creator, where we have a God who created the world so that humans could do that kind of work. But now let's introduce another world. Let's again introduce the world where there's no God. Why should I necessarily assume regularity and uniformity? Why should it be a given in a world where there's no mind that physics works? Now, it does work. We agree with that. But how is it explained? Or that humans could evolve from purely, I mean, I think there's a lot of luck, a lot of coincidence in evolution. Did we just get so lucky? Is it just a profound coincidence that we evolve so that our brains actually work and they work well enough for us to draw logical inferences, and that our sense of sight and smell and hearing gave us the capacity that we could do scientific experiments?
I think Hugh Ross would say we haven't been around enough to be that lucky. Typical astronomer talk. That's far too soon for those kinds of things to happen.
Well, those are right questions of.
It's kind of hard to imagine a world where we could exist, and the laws. There not be some laws of physics. That's fundamental, is that for a world or a universe to exist, there has to be some, it can't be all just random chaos. Otherwise, you wouldn't have things that have that have.
See, I'm messing with Dave's mind
here. I know.
Here.
I mean,
since I start moving beyond these assumptions of physics, he's getting rattled.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, that's a weird world.
Well,
that's not a world I want to be part of.
You're asking a question. You know, what if the world were different? I mean, if we lived in a quantum world, or if we lived in a, you know, there would be different laws. And if we existed in that world, it seems to me the key thing is that not so much that there aren't laws that govern this universe. They may be very different from the ones that we experience in our universe. But the real key thing is that why would the being that exists in this world, that came about through natural processes, why would that being have the characteristics, the mind, the ability to comprehend that world?
So we were evolved to do science.
It's just, and of course, evolution works on the ground of
survivability. Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with whether we can comprehend the laws governing this universe.
But what if the fundamental constants were not fine-tuned to allow for life?
Right. Well, then we don't exist. So, you know, where are you going to, say we don't exist? I mean, you're going to say we exist. What are the conditions necessary for us to exist? Well, there has to be some order. There has to be something that allows us to exist and for evolution to work. But the real showstopper in my mind is, why would we expect that natural process to produce a being that would necessarily have the ability to comprehend this?
And that's Paul Davies' point.
Right.
Let me ask then some questions here. So now, Joe, I'm going to move away from the sensus divinitatis. I'm going to move away from creation. I'm going to move away from a biblical perspective, and I'm going to ask some questions about naturalism. How can a world that is the product of blind, purposeless, random natural processes account for and justify the crucial conditions that make the scientific enterprise possible?
Exactly.
That's what I'm getting at when I ask, could science work in any world?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like science works in a particular world for particular mm-hmm. reasons. Here's another question. Aren't the order, regularity, and uniformity of nature out of place, unaccounted for, valueless coincidences in a purely naturalistic world, which could easily have been purely random and chaotic? I mean, what if there's no fine-tuning of the fundamental constants of physics? What if gravity doesn't work? It'd be a pretty weird world.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it exists in such a world. That's the, you know, so I don't know how to answer that question.
Here's another question. What accounts for the existence of abstract, non-empirical entities such as numbers, propositions, the laws of logic, inductive inferences in a world that is the product of a mindless accidental process? Mm-hmm. I don't know about the two of you,
mm-hmm.
but when I think of logic and I think of mathematics, I immediately think of a mind. It's hard for me to conceive of mathematical principles and logical principles just existing outside of a conceptual mind.
And for benefit of those who may be a little newer to this podcast, what you're getting at there is that we haven't invented these things. We've discovered them.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not that we have kind of carved out these things. They appear to be part of the fabric of reality. Mm-hmm. They seem to be part of the neighborhood.
That's what makes us as exceptional as human beings. That's the fact that we have that capability makes us exceptional. And why are we exceptional?
Here's another question. If the sensory organs and cognitive faculties of human beings are the result of chance and accident, how can they be trusted to yield coherent data such as objective truth? Mm-hmm. I mean, in a sense, we're getting at the argument from reason. If that brain of mine and my sensory organs, my eyes, my nose, my ability to taste and touch, the sensory organs, the cognitive faculty, the brain and the mind, if those are the product of luck, if they're the product of purely natural processes, how am I going to know that they're going to give me reliable? Now recognize I'm asking a particular question. I know they work.
They do.
They do work.
Yeah.
I know they work. The question is, why? How could, in a naturalistic context, how is it possible to explain that they work? One more question here. Since naturalism implies a type of physical determinism, all things are the product of what? Genetic, chemical, environmental factors? Then doesn't that by necessity rule out such things as uncoerced deliberate thought? I mean, if I'm part of the universe, and if I am the product of that physical universe, how can I stand above this physical body that I have and be a thoughtful, uncoerced individual? Now I guess you could say to all of these questions, we just got lucky.
Hmm. Just works. Brute force.
With that last question, are you getting at this question of, are we hardwired determined, or do we, in fact, have free will?
I am getting at that question. You know, determinism and freedom are in conflict with one another. And if I am merely matter in motion, if I'm just part of this naturalistic worldview, if I'm part of this worldview without thought, without reason, without rationality, how have I ended up being a person that seems to have so much reason, rationality? You know, I think we do have some sense of ability to, you know, to think through these kinds of things. This, of course, is what we're getting at when we talk about Christian capital, that the borrowing of the Christian worldview. And I want our listeners to appreciate this, that it appears that science began in the context of a Christian worldview, that philosophically and historically, the Bible shaped the scientific enterprise. But see, we've moved a long way from 1650. And we have now had other worldviews that have enveloped. And now there is many scientists who hold a naturalistic worldview. But you see, they believe in the same things that the scientists who are Christians affirm. But do they have the same ability to explain the world? How can they rely on their reason? How can they be sure that their senses are reliable? How do we know that math and logic, how do we know the laws of physics are all going to work that way? I guess I want to close our program by saying this. Could science work in just any world? Well, I mean, even if I grant Dave's point that there'd have to be some organizing principle.
For us to exist.
Still, if we're the product of blind mechanistic natural processes called evolution, we sure seem to be highly endowed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the better explanation is there's something going on the outside. There's a reason why the world is intelligible, and there's a reason why we can track that intelligibility. And if you're going to reject a theistic model, if you're going to reject the theistic religions of Judaism and Christianity, then I think you do have to come to grips. You have to grapple with the idea of why is the world the way it is? And why are human beings the way they are? And how do you explain this endowment? Now, you could throw your hands up and just say, look, those are philosophical, theological questions, and I don't have any idea. But we seem to be people who insist on asking those questions. And it seems that the Christian worldview, at minimum, has explanatory power and scope. And science works because of the world that we live in. And yet some people think that science is an obstacle to believing in God. When I think it's the opposite, I think the profound enterprise known as science makes me think that there has to be a rational mind behind the universe. Joe, I write about this topic because this is a very broad. We've talked about a lot of things here, haven't we? Mm-hmm. We've talked about some history. We've talked about some philosophy. We've talked about physics. We've talked about human beings. So I talk about this in more than one place. A very good chapter, I think, is in my book, A World of Difference, where I talk about Christianity and science. Are they allies or are they enemies? And I continue to develop some of this in A World of Difference and Seven Truths That Changed the World. But I think that these are really good questions to ask people who do trust in their reason and rationality, who believe in science, who think that this world is a remarkable world. I think the Christian worldview just has explanatory power that other worldviews can't. So my answer to the question, could science work in any world, is science works in this world because this world has all of the necessary conditions to allow that remarkable enterprise to flourish. Mm. And I think it has the fingerprints of God.
There you go. Great stuff. Thank you, Ken, for equipping us so we can engage those who might take a different viewpoint on this. Be sure to check out Ken's blog as well, reflectionbyken.wordpress.com. That's reflectionsbyken.wordpress.com. All right, that's going to wrap it up for Ken Samples and Dave Rogstad. This is Joe Aguirre with a reminder that the goal of apologetics is not victory but truth. Thanks for listening, and join us for the next edition of Straight Thinking.
Thank you for listening. Your prayers and financial support are reaching people with reasons for faith in Jesus Christ, our Creator and Savior. To allow Reasons to Believe programs like this to continue, make your gift today at reasons.org.